What's going on, Atlanta City fans? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Rushnell, and today we will be reviewing the 0-0 draw with Atlanta United. Before we get started, I'd like to thank our sponsors. First up is Lose Bonsai. They are run by OC's Twitter very own Jonathan Ridner. Lose Bonsai offers the finest quality bonsai trees and products at the lowest possible prices. Speaking of prices, Lose Bonsai is currently offering 15% off to all Orlando City SC supporters. All you have to do is call 917-418-3395, which is the number on the website, and tell them that you are an Orlando City SC supporter, and they will add the 15% discount code to your purchase. Head over to losebonsai.biz, L-O-U-S, bonsai.biz now to check it out. Other sponsors are, of course, the wonderful, the amazing Cappy's Subs. You can order over the phone at 407-647-9099 or online at cappyssubsfl.com. All one word. They are located at 501 North Orlando Avenue, Maitland, Florida. Make sure to leave a five-star review as we will be reading out any new ones onto the podcast. And with that, Daniel is back. I don't think we even mentioned it, but Daniel was under the weather. So, Daniel, how are you feeling today?
Well, first of all, screw you for not mentioning it.
I apologize. We just kind of got straight into it, you know?
Of course you did. You took advantage of the fact that I wasn't there.
Yeah.
Little bastard. But anyway, I'm actually a little bit over the weather now, so thank you. I appreciate the faux concern, Gavin.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic to hear that you are over the weather. Yeah. Chase?
I am perfectly at weather. I'm doing good.
All right, perfectly at weather. And Adam?
Currently mentally debating whether relation to weather should really be a phrase, you know? I'm leaning towards no. I think it sounds a bit ridiculous.
But listen, it's better than relations to your own sister, you know? I'd rather be related to the weather.
That was a bit of a stretch.
No. I'm not saying that you do that. I'm just generally, you know.
Welcome back, Daniel.
Yeah, welcome back. I am under the weather. I've been up since 4 a.m. It is 6:30 p.m., so let's get into this. Daniel, we're going to go straight to you. We're going to see if you know what you're talking about still or if you've gone a little bit delusional. I want to get your thoughts on the system we played, on the lineup, all of that going into a big away match against Atlanta United.
Well, I thought that the system we played on was a PS4. And the lineup was me and you, and I think we actually lost every single game because you suck.
All right. I will say I would probably be trash on the PS4. I hate the way the controller is like small, and I suck with the PS4 controller. I could run you off the Xbox, though. I could totally just 10-0.
Are you sure you just don't suck?
No, I'm really good at FIFA. I'm really good at FIFA.
Oh, you are? Because didn't you just say you just bought the game today?
Yeah. Yes, I caved in. I bought FIFA 21. I was really disappointed in myself, but I got a bigger check than I was expecting last pay period.
But, listen, to anyone that's listening, if you feel compassionate, Gavin is so dirty and filthy because he bought FIFA that... If you want to send him some shower gel, I'll make sure that he gets it, and he needs to go wash himself. Because
I do. Like, EA just pisses me off. Just the way they're... Ugh. Ugh. They're a bunch of lazy, gambling freaks. Oh, I hate EA.
I got it, and I got the Champions Edition, but that's me. I'm a scumbag. But you, Gavin, you've still got time in this world to be good.
I only bought the $60 one. I didn't pay $75 or whatever the Champions Edition is.
Yeah, well, I'll never do that again, and I said that last year. I was only going to buy... I literally only got FIFA 21 because Ellen Road's going to be in it for the first time in, like, 17 years. It's not even in it.
It's what?
It's coming in a future update because they didn't have time to do it.
That's EA for you!
That is the most EA thing I've ever heard.
Yes.
So, yeah. So bugger them, and the end in Orlando City Stadium. Exploria Stadium.
They'll never add that.
The thing that The thing I love most about FIFA is mindlessly playing career mode while listening to podcasts, like late at night, is one of my favorite activities.
I've been doing that with Madden 21.
It's a good show.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, Daniel, real lineup though. We started in what seems to be a 3-4-1-2. Obviously against Atlanta on the road. What were your thoughts on that?
I actually quite liked it because we have limitations as far as who was available. And I like the fact we went with two strikers up against a back four, because I felt that's actually a good way to play against a side like Atlanta. It gives them a little less time to press, pass the ball out of the back and control the possession, which, you know, Atlanta in their good day, that's usually how they played. We matched him in midfield, and I liked Perea playing as the furthest forward. I thought that's a very good tactical move by Oscar. You know, it's strange because you see the usual feedback, Perea's at 10, you know, he's not a 10, but he wasn't playing the role of a 10. He was just basically as a hustling ball-winning midfielder that played further forward. And it worked pretty well. I felt that, you know, for the lack of creativity that was in the lineup due to availability of players, we instead went for a little more sort of pragmatism in the team and more of a physical game. And I think it suited Orlando in this particular match, to be honest. The wing-backs, Robinho and Smith, I thought were pretty good. Smith's growing in confidence, and Robinho, I thought, had a very decent showing for his that's his first start of the season, right? If I'm right, I'm thinking.
Started, I think, against Nashville, the 1-1 draw.
Oh yes, that's right. So he played a different role that he's not used to, but he did very well. And then I thought the back three were extremely solid, and Brian Rowe was there, so I was pretty happy with the lineup when I saw it. I can understand the apprehension, but taking into context. You know,
what else is he supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to change it at some point, because if you play the same 11, I mean, you're inevitably going to get problems. So I was happy with the lineup. I was happy to see Desart, Robinho, and Rowe getting in the team. I thought it's good to see what they got.
Adam, heading over to you, what were your thoughts on the way we pressed their back line? Obviously, it was very clear that DK and Michel would take one of the two center backs, and Perea would kind of float and try and take a midfielder out of the equation. And it worked really well, and especially in the first 20 to 30 minutes of the match, Atlanta just were not connected at all. They had too many midfielders and forwards, way too forward, and their defenders were on the edge of their box, and they were just so disconnected. And to me, I felt it worked great, but what were your thoughts on that, and did you like it? Were you not a fan of it? What were your thoughts on it?
It was a good strategy to start the game, you know, against a weaker team like Atlanta. You can kind of take it to them. And one of the things that doesn't require creative talent, which we sorely lacked in this lineup, is pressing. That's more of a cohesive team thing and a mentality thing that everyone on the squad has in spades. And so that press really worked, and it kind of serves to get cheaper goals. And chances, which we didn't get the goals, but we saw those cheap chances come up a few times where a turnover happens, you get the ball in Atlanta's final third already, and then you have like a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 or something, which the guy in loads of space. And it was Oscar knew that this lineup was a little weaker on attack power, so he needed to do something against a similarly weak lineup on the other side to artificially manufacture pressure and chances almost. So I thought that was a very good tactical decision.
And it almost worked. There were a couple times where we would win the ball off them and sprint forward, and just the quality was not there in attack today, unfortunately, and we couldn't get that ball in the back of the net. We were close a couple times, obviously hitting the crossbar, Guzan coming up with some massive double saves, Robinho hitting off the post, but you know, it's a game of inches. It's a game of decisions, and unfortunately, it wasn't there for us. Chase, I know. We don't know what would have happened had Escobar got the second yellow, but I do think it deserves some sort of mention, some sort of question, just because it's clearly a second yellow in the first half, let alone in the second half. And he gets away with it after last match, the consistency isn't there again. Mendez gets taken off for a similar foul on a yellow card. They're down to 10 men. We're already dominating the game. We can start to push bodies forward, and we are already a team that does really well in possession with creating chances. You're sitting there with Nani and Mueller on the bench, who you can bring on 55th minute. All sorts of things change if Escobar gets the red card. I'm not saying we 100% win the game, but with the direction that both teams are heading in, I think it's more than likely that we sneak a goal in. Obviously, it's just pros gonna pro, but how big of an effect was it that Escobar didn't get the second yellow? And do you think it kind of affected us mentally at all negatively?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we let it affect us too much mentally. You know, it's just something that happens in the game. Like, if you think a player should be sent off, but they're not, if you think a player should be sent off and they're not, you should be able to probably move past that. And I think they did to an extent. But where a lot of, you know, kind of the effect we felt from this, I feel like in the second half, we were kind of maybe in just kind of results mode, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know, Oscar Pereira kind of just wanted to get out of there with a point, especially with like such a heavily rotated squad, which maybe he had like kind of an eye to the Columbus game coming up. You know, we were a little bit happy with Atlanta having the ball. Like, I think they edged us in possession just minorly, not too much, but a lot of that just kind of came in meaningless possession, playing it around between like the holding mids and their center backs and stuff like that, where, you know, we were fine with that. Like, we were kind of willing to escape with a draw, I felt like, towards the end of the game. And, you know, had it been down to 10 men, I think we would have been a little bit more willing to go forward because, you know, even though Escobar is just a fullback, you know, he and George Bello were given a bit of a license to go forward. And whenever you're down to 10 men, you often see teams kind of just immediately go into a low block and try to protect whatever result that they can get. And, you know, with Escobar probably wrongfully being on the field and Atlanta not being down to a 10-man advantage, we were, you know, not able to attack as much as we would like because, you know, like Adam said, we didn't necessarily have a whole lot of creative power on the field, but with a man advantage, like, anything could happen. And you know, Nani and Chris did come on and start creating more. And Nani, especially with, you know, Escobar being a right-sided player, and they probably would have had to make some level of tactical change because it's not like George Bello can slip into a third center back or anything like that. So Nani probably would have had a lot more space out there to try to get on the ball and make something happen. And just overall, like, you know, I don't want to point to any one instance of a game because and say, you know, that's why we didn't come out with a win, because we had a couple chances that maybe we should have done better in Atlanta, where Brad Guzan in particular, he was even to it a lot. So, you know, it was more than just that, but I do think that it played a big impact on, you know, preventing us from getting that final goal.
All right, yeah, let's move off that. There's not much more to say other than just what you just said. Yeah, it just sucks. Move on. Moving on into the second half, Daniel. For me, part of what Chase says is true. Well, maybe not true, but I think that's partly what happened. Oscar was looking at Columbus more than Atlanta and hoping we can maybe sneak a win and not go full throttle. We end up getting the point. Also, do you think that we were tired, or do you think Atlanta was increasingly getting better and dominating the game a bit? Because I thought they had a pretty decent second half for the most part. Obviously, we had some chances, but they did have a 15-20 minute period where they were definitely the side in the ascendancy. So I want to get your thoughts on, were we tired or were Atlanta good?
It's a little bit of both. You have to remember they've actually gone into some fairly decent form lately. They won 4-0, I think, the game before against DC. So they were on a high wave coming into this match.
Okay, we could have beat DC United 4-0 with this lineup.
Yeah, but, you know, confidence is everything. I mean, you know, it's...
Yeah, I know.
Sport's a confidence game. You know, it's, you know, when you do something good, you remember it and you do it further. You know, you keep doing it. Just like when you lose heavily, like we've seen, you know, in different types of situations, it becomes a habit. So, at the end of the day, they could have been playing Savannah under-15s and 1-10-0. They would have gotten confidence from that in some way because, you know, it's a win to win, and you do the things you're good at and you get the confidence doing it. So I think they're coming in on a bit of a high end to the match. They also probably have the idea of revenge in the back of their mind, or some wounded pride or something like that. I thought they put on a pretty good game, and they started to look like they're starting to find a bit of a system again. I think Orlando would have won had they had Pereira and Nani on the field for the full game. I still think Orlando probably would have won the game because we didn't ask enough questions of Atlanta in a creative sense. But I wouldn't say we're particularly tired. I thought the new guys that came in gave a very positive influence on the match. I thought Desert was very energetic and Brian Rowe looked solid. I mean, so I think that the players looked okay, to be quite honest. I just think that we just didn't have the right personnel on the field to win this match.
I personally disagree with you on that last point just because Atlanta were getting to all the second balls come the end of the match. And part of that was Junior Urso was one of the two in the midfield double pivot. And he was absolutely shattered. And I don't blame him. He started the last six games. And going around the squad, like let's go through the starting lineup real quick, all right? So Rowe's come in. Okay, Rowe doesn't matter. He's a goalkeeper. Schlegel started the last four or five games. Janssen started the last 5 to 6 games. Miller's been in there for a lot since Moutinho went down. Rubinho's come in from out in the cold. Like, yeah, he's rested, but going from 0 minutes to 60, 65 minutes, like, understandably, he's going to get tired around that time. Desart even more. Like, the fact he completed 90 minutes is insane to me. You should not be able to go from barely playing to a full 90-minute match. That's just unheard of. He was definitely not up to full match fitness. Junior Urso, like I said, started the last six matches. He's going to start the next one. Kyle Smith's been playing a lot. Perea's played in every single MLS game for us. Michel's been seeing a decent amount of minutes, but he would probably be one of the more rested players on this lineup. And DK, of course, has been seeing a lot of minutes. I mean, personally, yes, everybody's been seeing a lot of minutes, and that's because our squad is really getting depleted now. But I do think that part of Atlanta's good play in the game was down to just us getting a little tired.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I get where you're coming from. I mean, you could well be right, but I just personally thought we didn't look terrible. I just felt that Atlanta on the day we just put up a better game than they did the last time. It's kind of just a two different teams cancelling each other out, really, more than anything else. There wasn't a great deal of creativity on either team. There was chances in the game, but it wasn't, neither team really played beautiful football as such. It was just an open game that was a 0-0. I thought it was quite an entertaining 0-0, but I just think both teams had the right amount of pragmatism to stop each other scoring and made it a scrappy-ish type of game. I saw some feedback in the social media about, the surface being a problem and such, and that could have been a factor as well with our players and why they maybe didn't get as much rhythm as we would expect. But I didn't see tiredness from everywhere. I think I see a point with Urso, but I thought the rest of the players looked okay. That's just me, though. I mean, it's just my perception.
Yeah, the funny thing is actually when we moved Junior Urso up into the attacking mid and we brought Perea back just to kind of hide Urso, that's exactly the moment when we started to like improve our play again. So that was the main reason I noticed it, because we were not doing good for like 15, 20 minutes, like I said. Mm-hmm. Urso moves forward into the attacking mid role and all of a sudden we're starting to get back on the ball again. So that's how I noticed it. Adam, let's move back over to you. We bring Nani on with about 10, 15 minutes left, and he barely got the ball, and we barely got it to his side. Like, were you disappointed in how we kind of used Nani in the dying minutes of this game, considering he was clearly making chances for us, and we only went to him twice?
Yeah, and those two chances were the two best chances of the second half, I thought that Nani got brought on way too late. Like those two chances that he did get were the two best chances of the second half, but he's a player that needs to read the game. He needs to get kind of in the rhythm of it, because so much of what he does is that his vision and his analysis of the players around him, the more he's used to the flow of the game, the more effective he is. So I would have liked to see him even come on at the half, at the okay, we were a little disappointed. We didn't score on all those great chances. We need like a veteran presence, a steadying hand. I'm sure that Oscar could have found a way to get him on the half if he really wanted. I can see why you wouldn't. You know, you don't want to make many halftime subs, but I think this game might have called for it.
Let me stop you there real quick.
Yeah.
This kind of goes back to last episode with my mental thing. Robinho was not having a bad game. And the only player Nani's coming in for is Robinho.
Maybe Benji. Benji didn't have a great game.
Yeah, I don't think he did either, but Nani did end up coming on for Robinho, and I think that's the only plausible move in the system.
Yeah, maybe.
So I think that hurts Robinho's mentality. I mean, even did you see when Robinho came off? Pereja gave him like a massive bear hug. Like, that's just...
Robinho didn't have a bad game. I was pleasantly surprised with his ability to not suck.
In the left wing back role, funnily enough, which we had talked about before.
Yeah, there are times you just need Nani, and we needed more Nani, you know? But yeah, he was on when he had the ball. Part of it was we're getting killed in the midfield for much of the middle of the second half. When Ursa was the real problem. I think it was probably his worst game in purple, in my opinion.
He was dead tired, man. I promise you. He was gassed.
I know. I was watching. Like, I'm not saying that he's a bad player now, but he's an older player, and he needs some of that rotation, and he's not going to get it because our midfield is super depleted right now. But it's definitely showing, and he was getting beat constantly in midfield. And so we had no possession, and Nani, he does a lot of things, but he's not going to drop in midfield and win possession. That's not him. And so if we're getting killed in the midfield, then there's really not much Nani can do. But we need to figure out a way while we're getting killed in the midfield to just like eliminate the midfield player and just like go straight to the wings, you know? And that didn't happen. So I don't necessarily think that the usage of Nani was disappointing because he was used like he's always used, but just getting the ball to him was not good.
Oh, that's what I meant. That's what I was disappointed in, the fact that the players on the field did not literally use him, because all of our attacks seemed to originate up the right. It was as if we were trying to make Nani the end of our attack, put the cross into Nani and let him score. You need him to create the attack. And the two times we went to him to do it, he created a goal-scoring opportunity. And I think if we flooded down that left-hand side, put the ball on Nani's feet as many times as possible, who knows? Something could have happened. We could have snuck out of there with a 1-0 win.
Statistically, he's going to make something happen if you put the ball at his feet enough.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just not a fan of playing with no creative players, and I don't think Urso counts as a creative player, especially if he's this tired. And so we managed to create a few chances in the second half, but the reason I call them cheap chances is because they're, other than the Smith cross, which, my God, but other than that, they're cheap chances because they don't rely on like exquisite player skill to create them. You know, they mostly came off of turnovers and pressing. I think you need to buy a chance with an expensive player, just, you know, have one on there that if your system isn't working and you need one guy to kind of go out and put the team on his back, it doesn't have to be Nani. It could have been Chris Mueller, who's also been running to the ground a little bit, and Pereira, of course, coming off an injury, but you need one of those guys just to come in there and buy you a chance if you need it. And I think that this game sorely lacked that. And the more they get in the rhythm of a game, the better they are at being able to buy that chance. And so I think this game just lacked creativity, and it really, really needed it.
While I understand, like, I agree with you. While I understand that Nani should be, like, rested for the Columbus game, I almost thought Pereja was going to actually start Nani and then have him be on the bench against Columbus and use Benji's pace as, like, a way to push Columbus back when they come on the attack and use him as a counterattacking piece because that's what he's best at. So I thought we were actually going to go with the creative route. And while I was surprised to not see Nani, I wasn't like mad about or anything, because obviously Benji Michel is still a good player who can contribute to an attack, but this just wasn't his game. And I think that was just down to Atlanta's play style in the game. I mean, they let us, you know, towards them, and that's not his game.
You know what I think would have been, I mean, if we score in the second or in the first half, then we can take that 1-0 to the grave against this Atlanta team. Honestly, Dom was their only threat.
Well, we almost did that before and then we didn't.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can say that.
I mean, yeah, obviously, of course, anything can happen. But if I were picking a team to defend a 1-0 lead against, you know, I'm not exactly scared of this iteration of Atlanta. And so maybe it almost worked. I'm not saying it was totally wrong tactics or anything. I'm not a huge fan of what Preha did, but he's obviously the one getting paid the big bucks, and I understand why he did it. But maybe we could have started the game with Nani, assured that first goal in the first half almost, and then just taken him off pretty quick, like at 55 or something, and get him that rest, you know? Mm-hmm. And then he could still start against Columbus after playing 55.
All right, Chase, your turn finally again. I saved this one for you specifically because you have been really, really, really happy with Kyle Smith's play. I personally think Kyle Smith, and I don't want to get too big on him here, but look, his delivery was fantastic again this game. His delivery, if he keeps it up, is better than Juan's. And that's not really a hard thing to say because Juan just doesn't have delivery anyway. So Kyle Smith has a better delivery than Juan. He's around the same defensively, maybe a little better than Juan. Would you say that he is starting to push himself into the conversation of being a viable starting right back for us?
It's a very hard question. I mean, for the most part, I would almost say that he's made us not necessarily feel the effects of Juan's injury. Juan adds a lot of pace, and he's just an option for kind of streaking, especially on counterattacks. But Kyle Smith has created a decent amount of chances from the wide areas of this game, just being able to whip in across and find him like our big target forward in DK. I think when Juan's back, it's definitely Kyle Smith is probably going to go play left back. Like, I think that Kamal definitely probably should be dropped, even though I was really happy with how Kamal played today. Man, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's starting to at least be a question. Like even before these, like, say, just two games, like, I think it would have been without question when Juan returns, Juan is back. Because Juan, in many people's minds, is like a top five right back in the MLS. But Kyle Smith has been genuinely playing on form, which it hasn't been a big sample size, but he has been playing like to that level. Like when he is called upon defensively, he has done very well. And, you know, he didn't really come up against any great attacking threats. Like maybe Atlanta's biggest threat this game was probably like Brooks Lennon, and that was on Kamal Miller's side, and Kamal dealt with him well. But, you know, Kyle Smith, of course, we talk about that like 2v1 chance and his delivery for DK's goal in the previous game. And for this one here, like Adam said in the last game that it was a bit of maybe just a little bit of luck, like, which I understand what he's saying. Like, he probably didn't attempt to, on DK's goal against New York, he probably didn't attempt to like effortlessly float it over Aaron Long right onto DK's head, like 100%. But like, he puts it in the area and like he's finding the man and he's doing it consistently. Like, DK did well to get to that ball, but you know, he was in a very small window and Kyle Smith hit it from a wide area. And you know, even on the double save, like he put like a really nice strike on goal. And I mean, I don't know. Like, I probably do think that it's still Juan's job. And I think Kyle Smith is going to be, you know, the type of player that isn't going to be disheartened if he has to kind of maybe push to the left side or drop to the bench, because I think he understands that probably is his role. But he's definitely giving Oscar something to think about. I mean, you do have to consider form when making these lineups. And on form, he's just been seriously impressive. Like, his attacking output has really kind of matched Juan's, but Juan has obviously done it for maybe like a season and a half, and Kyle Smith has really only started to show this, I don't want to say like elite attacking output, but like very, you know, a very quality delivery. Maybe other than João Moutinho, when it comes to fullbacks on the team, like, he has the best cross And he's just giving us something to think about, I guess. But I don't know. I still feel like that's Juan's job. And Chris Mueller and Juan, like, that's kind of a pairing on the right side that I would be hesitant to break up because, you know, Chris Mueller is a really good technical player that reads Juan's movements well, and he's able to slip them in behind. And while Kyle Smith, you know, works with him pretty decently, like, I don't know, like we've been on this kind of 10-game run, and I think a lot of that is to do with, you know, our primary 11 that we've had. And even though Kyle Smith is playing to an elite level, like, as much as I probably would like to say he could be within that conversation, I don't think realistically, like, he would start over a fully fit Juan, no matter how, you know, pretty good he's been on form, like, very good he's been on form. Like, he's arguably, like, the best backup kind of utility fullback in the league, I would say.
Let me ask it to you this way, Daniel. If we're going into a final, the MLS final, and Kyle Smith is having similar output on offense in terms of good crosses, dangerous crosses, and as we already all know, he's a strong, sturdy defender. Going into an MLS final, would you start the strong, sturdy defender who can do a job on offense, or would you start the pacey right back who can also kind of flip it, do a job on offense or on defense, but on offense, you know, create that magical pace, create that magical spark? Like, what would your preference be?
For me, I'd still pick Juan. I think he's a big part of just how Orlando plays. So even if he doesn't always get on the ball when he's in the attacking third, his runs make space for other players to do their thing. And as much as I like Kyle Smith and how well he's playing, I think the team dynamic looks just a little bit more fluid when Juan is on the field. So that would be my pick. And that's not a slight against Smith at all, but that would just be my pick based on this season.
All right, that's fair. Adam, let's move into line up, line down. So hit me with your picks.
My lineup is someone that has been the subject of a lot of conversation in the past week about how he would do replacing our Peruvian international goalkeeper. And that's Brian Rowe, who made two crazy saves, one in each half, that, you know, if he doesn't make those saves, it's a 2-0 loss, and then we're feeling really bad about ourselves. So Brian Rowe, his weak spots were more like commanding the defense and his distribution. I never thought that his shot stopping was awful. I mean, no parts of his game are awful, but I thought that the shot stopping was probably the better part of his game. And he's won MLS Cup before. He's not an incredible goalkeeper. You know, he's not a showstopper. He's gonna make those saves every game, but he's not gonna lose you a game either. And you know, he kind of stole the draw on the other side of it for us in this one. So yeah, Brian Rowe, very good job. And Urso, my man, you know, he just looked gassed, and then he had an opportunity to put away the game. And I don't know how we haven't talked about this on this episode yet, but that chance he had, I mean, it was effectively one-on-one with Guzan with that absolute silver platter that Nani put that cross on, and he had it. He lined up with his side foot. It one of the easiest goals Urso would ever have to score. And he shoots it right at Guzan.
It was a lazy shot.
It was so lazy.
It's tired legs, in my opinion. That's my opinion, but I think it's a lazy shot.
For a veteran of the game like Urso is, he has to twist his ankle just the extra couple degrees to put it in the corner. Yeah, and part of being a veteran, part of being a great player versus a good player, is having the mental strength to, when you're in that position in the dying moments of the game, and you can get your team that 1-0 win rather than the 0-0 draw, able to have the wherewithal to put that shot in the corner rather than straight at the keeper. And he failed. And it was not a good showing from Urso. He also just didn't do his job in midfield. And yeah, he looks gassed. He's played a ton of minutes and he's not getting any rest, but that doesn't change the fact that he wasn't good. So he's my line down.
That's a fair assessment of the game. Chase, over to you.
So my lineup is going to be a player that has received a little bit of scrutiny with his previous performances. It's Kamal Miller. He's kind of had to come in an increased role, with the injury of Jean Moutinho. And, you know, I understand that there's been a couple errors in his past games, but I've actually thought that he did well for the most part. And he was fairly adventurous with the ball at his feet, which isn't necessarily something that we would consider him to be, you know, a ball-playing, defensive-minded player. Because even while, you know, has been playing fullback, his role going forward has been limited a little bit. But we've often kind of looked at him to shift play and kind of start attacks almost at times. And, you know, he's often a player with a lot of touches on the ball. And that was a similar case today. And he had a really interesting matchup. Like, Brooks Lennon was probably coming off the performance of his MLS career, getting 2 assists and a goal against DC United. And as Daniel said, once a player enters the game with, you know, that kind of confidence and on form, you can kind of pose a threat to anyone. And, you know, I don't want to say Kamal pocketed him, but I would say for the most part, he kind of limited what would have been probably Atlanta's most threatening attacking player. And I think he showed like a really kind of expansive passing range. Like, he was 6 of 10 for long balls, and overall he had completed 65 accurate passes with an 86% pass accuracy. And, you know, that's kind of what comes to be expected of a center backs, and we play more of a back three today. But with the ball at his feet, he looked capable. He was able to play out the back and kind of switch the point of play and give us some attacking opportunities. And he did well with what could have been Atlanta's most dangerous attacking player. So, yeah, Kamal Miller, a bit more of a complete performance than we've seen in the past, you know, in the previous game against New York, when he would do pretty well for most of the game. There would be some errors that would end up costing the team, and we didn't see that today. So, yeah, another solid performance from Kamal, and he's my lineup for this week. And my line down is going to be Benji Michel. I don't really think he did a whole lot this game. Oftentimes between him and DK, he maybe would be the player that could create more for himself. And playing in this kind of two striker formation, with DK maybe being a bit more of the target forward, he was going to have to be kind of running off and trying to get slipped in behind, or at least receive the ball if we kind of played long to DK. And I don't really think he did that too much. He lost possession a little bit too much for my liking, and there would be times in the game where he would really just kind of drift out of, you know, just impacting the game overall. And, you know, he pressed well in the beginning, but yeah, playing in this two striker formation, which I've actually been really excited to see, you know, DK and Benji play in a two striker formation. As I said, maybe they would have benefited with more of an attacking midfielder kind of behind them rather than Andreas Pereira. So maybe the fault isn't completely at the, you know, DK did well today. He created a couple chances, and his hold up play was all right. I just didn't feel like Benji was there, and Benji wasn't able to get on the end of many long balls, create many chances, or really trouble Brad Guzan that much today. So yeah, my line down is going to be Benji Michel.
All right, Adam.
I already won. It's Daniel.
Daniel.
Confusion.
Hi. I mean, you guys took the candidates I wanted for lying down. So I'll just tell you now that I'm lying down. Like, I'm just having a good lie down. That's as close as I'm going to get to a lying down. But lying up, I think I'll go for Dessert. I think he stood up extremely well in his debut. I think it's his full debut, right? It's his first start. So I thought he was extremely, extremely composed, very strong. Did what he needed to do. Maybe showed a couple signs of rust, but it's the same as we discussed with Rubinho a little bit earlier, that you got a player coming in from the cold and you can't expect them to come in and put in like a massive performance. I thought his performance in the context of the whole game was great, and he finished the full match, so very good for him. I mean, it's nice to have depth, and he must have been the 7th or 8th choice central midfielder, I think, at one point, and he's in the starting lineup, so it's good for him. I think it bodes well for the team to have players come in and able to put on a performance and do a job. You know, good for him, and he's my lineup.
I mean, maybe this is just because we have Oscar Pereja, but and he's able to get so much out of these fringe players, and and you know, just with his management mentality and all that, and how everybody's bought in. But I, at the moment, I think we have the best squad in the MLS. I mean, you look at the players we have. We have a backup center back. We have a backup center back playing at left back. We have our backup, technically backup right back. We have our fifth string DM at DM. We have our third string DM at attacking midfielder. We have our like fifth string winger at left wing back. We have our starting striker, and we have like a good striker as well in Michelle. And then we have our backup goalkeeper. And yeah, we only get the draw here, but this was a match on the margins that we very easily could have won had a call gone our way, had we finished a couple of our decent chances. So just, and we're kind of doing this. We're going to start having to do this week in, week out, if Juan and Pereira don't come back sooner rather than later. So, I mean, I personally believe we have the best squad in MLS overall.
I mean, in terms of players coming in and fitting into the slots, I'd say you have a good argument. I still think we're three players short of having the best squad. Striker, attacking midfielder and a winger. I still think we're three players short. Maybe even four if you count another specialist left back. But it's a fair point, I think.
Well, we might get that striker today, pending news.
Yeah, yep. You wonder if he's going to be match fit, though. I mean, he hasn't played.
He's going to have to practice for like a week or two before he's going to appear. But, you know, I think it was Julia said, Oscar said that Julia Poe reported that Oscar said that IS could be cleared today.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if we do get him over the coming weeks. We have a question on that, so we'll discuss it here in a second. My line up, I'm going to give it to my boy Robinho. I thought he came in and did a good job at the left wing back role, something he's obviously not familiar with. Again, something we've talked about on this podcast before, wanting to see him maybe a little bit deeper if we have to. And he went and deputized really well, obviously hitting off the post. For me, didn't put a foot wrong. Maybe could have like attempted to be a little bit more dangerous. I thought he was being a little too safe at some moments, but I thought he could have cut in and took a couple more shots. But yeah, overall, he had a very good game for the time he was on the pitch. And again, it's just great to see someone so down the depth chart have a good game after starting. And lying down, like Daniel said, there's really no other major candidates other than the two that were picked. Because, like, I mean, DK was fine. Pereira was fine. Desart was, you know, he was a lying up candidate. Jansen was great. Rowe was great. Schlegel was fantastic yet again. So I'm just going to give it to Rubio Vasquez because you're a better referee than that, my man. You are a better referee than that. I don't know if you forgot your red card or in the locker room or what happened, but no way you can let Escobar get away with that. And you did. So lying down, Rubio Vasquez and VAR for not stepping in there either. It's a varsicle. It's a varse. That's what the word is. Let's end there for part one, and we will do part two for fan questions right after this. All right, and we're back for part two where we answer fan questions from Twitter. And the first one's going to come from me because I just want to get this question in. What? No. We have three questions to discuss. But right at the end there, we talked about Schlegel, and I thought he deserved a mention because, Daniel, I want to go to you for this one specifically because you've talked about how you didn't think Schlegel was ready. Schlegel is playing, in my opinion, fantastic at the moment, and kind of similar to Kyle Smith, who on is Schlegel starting to oust Antonio Carlos, or maybe should we see Antonio Carlos and Schlegel starting over Jansen? I mean, what are the thoughts here now that we have yet another starting quality center back backing up our two starters.
I still think he's a bit of a nutcase.
You know, talk about his play, not his mentality.
Yeah, but he's playing a mentality, the same thing. It doesn't matter. You could, if you play 89 minutes of a good game and then, you know, act like a whack job for the other 1 minute, then your 89 minutes is undone. But no, he played himself into contention. I mean, I'm certainly more in favour of him than I was a few weeks ago. So, you know, and the run of games has probably helped him. I mean, I don't think you should ever fully judge a player till after 10 games or so in the team. That can apply to every position, I think. And with Schlegel, my argument with Schlegel was that he just wasn't ready to be that starting centre-back in the 11 yet, because I didn't think you could trust him enough, you know, to keep his head or to make the right decisions. But he's getting better. I mean, and he's had a good run of games. I mean, this is what, his fourth or fifth start now, I think, so...
Has started every game since the Chicago match, so four in a row.
So yeah, so now he's putting together a run, and like, I'm looking at his picture here now, and he looks like he's about to kill somebody. But but
don't you guys say he looks like me?
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, and you look like some like dodgy like 1970s film director.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
but no, obviously, it's like he's playing himself into form. He's doing pretty well for himself. I think that if we're on podcasts and we can see certain things about a player, then you can guarantee the coaches see those things as well. And if the coach is getting him to maybe help him maintain his composure a bit more and to blend into the system with a lot more ease, then yeah, he's doing well, and it's a good problem to have. I don't think he'd take out Antonio Carlos just yet. I think him and Janssen's still the two, but if you've got three top-quality starting centre-backs, then good. If he keeps playing the way he is, then he deserves to be permanently signed at the end of the year, you know?
Mm-hmm. That was going to be my follow-up, but you just answered it right at the end. You said before you weren't sure if we should sign him now. You think we should. Let's move on to a real question here from our follower at Tree City Lions. Adam, thoughts on Robinho's contribution and if he has a role to play moving forward as a 15-minute second-half sub, something we really haven't seen from him.
Robinho started because we had no one else to do it, and he was okay. And if we have the option of playing someone else, I would.
All right.
Good. No, I do not think he has a role in a fully healthy squad.
Good, sorry. Quick, crisp answer. I love it. Chase, what? This is from at Kirby Hazard. Great listener. One of our fantastic listeners, Charlotte. What changes do you think will be made to the starting 11? Smith went off injured last game, and we are unsure if he is fit. Who would you put at right back if he isn't available? Would you go to three at the back? ?
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't go to three at the back just because I don't think that we have the personnel to right now. Like, that would almost call for Robinho to play again, and I'm not necessarily as high as you guys are on his game. I maybe almost would just put Dejan there and just have like a strictly defensive back line, and then maybe just allow our wingers to stay forward. And but, you know, if Kyle Smith isn't healthy for this game or Juan isn't back, man, like we're going to be in a little bit of trouble because, you know, Dejan deputized well, but we were kind of in results mode then. And, you know, I don't want to be in results mode for 90 minutes against a team that's in the shield race alongside us. So,
well, I'll weigh in on this as well. I'm going to go into full-on football manager coach mode right now. If our right backs are fully all injured, I would put Perea there, number 21. I think Perea could be a very good right back.
I was expecting you to say something else.
No. I just look at the way Perea plays. He's got a good engine. He seems pretty a disciplined player. You see it quite a bit now with midfield players getting converted into fullbacks. And even into centre-backs. I'm a big proponent of having a centre-back. a third centre-back that plays in midfield and vice versa. I'm high on that type of philosophy. And I could see a central midfielder like Perea, who seems to be a decent all-round player, good in the tackle, fairly good defensively, good on the ball. He could easily move into a right back slot as an inverted right wing back. pushing into midfield a little bit and supporting, you know, the midfielders that push forward. I think that could work. You know, that's just something I would try. Like if I was looking at our roster now and who's flexible enough, because I don't see De Jong as a right back. I just don't know if he's got the, you know, the poise and the composure to do it. Like, as a centre back, as a good third centre back, I think in the back three, De Jong's pretty good. But I just don't see him as a player, as a right back. Not in the system we're trying to play, where we need possession. I just don't think he handles the ball well enough to play it. And we've seen what can happen if you've got, you know, a back line of defenders that can't handle the ball. You end up with that ball coming back at you all the time. And then you're putting yourselves under pressure. And I would try something like that. That would be my play if I was the coach. I'd be looking at something like that.
No, you're not talking about permanently, right?
No, I'm talking about...
just for like a game or two, if necessary.
Yeah, I come from a mindset. Like, I always look at MLS squads. They have like 30 players. And I always wonder to myself, like, I know you're going to need all 30 at some point or another, but you can't possibly keep a squad of 30 happy. That can't be good for harmony, you know, having a good clutch of players that aren't going to play. So my feeling is that you get lesser players, but they can all play more positions. And Perea, if you could make one of your midfielders into someone who can slot in at fullback. I mean, look at Lucho Larrea, for instance. You know, he was a number 8 and couldn't get a game for Orlando. Now he's pushing to be a, you know, an MLS All-Star right back in Toronto. I mean, he's an example of a player who's a good footballer, who's young, with the physical characteristics and the technical ones to be able to adapt to a new position. And, you know, we've done it at Leeds. We had a right winger, Stuart Dallas, who was championship average when Marcelo Bielsa took over, and now he's an attacking left wing back for Leeds in the first 11 in the Premier League on the left hand side. It's something that can be done, and we have a central midfielder, Jamie Shackleton, who plays at right back now. So it's something that coaches can do depending on how you like to play the game, and we do play progressive possession football at our best. It's something that I just wouldn't be surprised if we saw, if you get what I'm saying.
All right. Chase, do you want to ask Daniel your question?
Well, this is just like a general question. Mm-hmm. We had Michael Halliday on the bench, and I think he's like a 17-year-old, maybe 18-year-old now, who's been kind of training with the first team for quite a while, and I do think that he's a right back by trade. What would y'all think about like giving him his first start against Columbus if need be?
I don't think I'd do it against Columbus, but if needs must, I mean, then you do it. I mean, the only thing is, if he's on the bench, then you have to assume that the coach thinks he's good enough, otherwise he wouldn't be there. So
yeah, that was kind of my line of thinking, too.
I mean, if we look at it from another angle, I would put Halliday into this team now. But if it was a team from last season, which was just getting tonked every game, almost, you wouldn't put a player in, not a young player, at that point where they could be vulnerable and, you know, have the confidence destroyed. So, I mean, I wouldn't ideally put him in against Columbus, but if you have to, I think it's a better position to be putting them into a winning team than into a team that's on a losing run.
My only worry with Perea would be just his defensive positioning. I think it would be awful. So I think, you know, like on back post crosses and stuff. So I think you just go with De Jong, and, you know, plus we have nobody in midfield. Like, who do we put in midfield? Like, Loera?
Say that.
there is nothing there.
Well, I'm going on the assumption that Rossell and Pereira might well be back.
Rossell and Pereira haven't even been on the bench, though,
they
for our game on Wednesday.
But that could be by design. You know, that could be just to give them extra time to get ready.
Here's the thing. De Jong has moonlighted it right back when he has needed to. I think Pereira has already told us through that if something happens to one of the players playing fullback right now, he's the next guy.
No, if that's the decision. If that's the decision, then that's fine. I support that decision by the coach. You just asked me what I would do. Or I volunteered, I should say, what I would personally do. And that's just based off the way we like to play in our system. But, you know, I understand the De Jong argument. And to be honest, he's been around all season waiting patiently for an opportunity, so he, you know, he probably deserves to get one. If I'm fair, if everyone else is getting one, he should get one as well.
All right, let's move on to another question. Um, The last two aren't even serious. All right. So at Jose G. De La Rosa, Adam, why is their turf so crappy?